I would say the biggest thing is there's sort of this known fact, like, okay, the second verse needs to rhythmically vary from the first verse. And just a very slight change in the pattern really gives you a brand new set of ears for the second verse, because you're really not approaching it in the same melodic or rhythmic format that you did in the first verse. So I've worked with co-writers that really gave me like a new rhythmic pattern for that verse, and all of a sudden it like completely opens up this whole new world for the song.
Welcome to Songwriter Trysts. This is an intimate podcast that is connecting songwriters from all over the world. I'm singer-songwriter Ray Lee. Music saved my life, and I love talking with other artists about the power of songwriting and their journey to where they are today. This is a safe space to share stories, lessons, and emotions, all the great things that build an amazing song. Please support the podcast by subscribing, or you can buy us a coffee, all through the website songwritertrysts.com. Welcome to A Songwriter Tryst with Scott Clay. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Thank you for coming on. So I like to get everyone to start by telling us, who are you and where do you come from?
Yeah, so my name is Scott Clay. I'm an Americana performer and songwriter, and I was born and raised in Washington State in the northwest of the United States. And I've moved to Nashville to pursue a career in music, and I've been living there for a little over 2 years now.
Okay, so 2 years in Nashville. How's it going?
It's really good. I absolutely love it.
What inspired the move to Nashville?
I started touring full time throughout the United States, and Washington, although it's a beautiful place, it is definitely far from many of the other markets that I started performing in. Mm-hmm. So just logistically, Nashville started becoming a hub that I spent time in because I was traveling on that side of the country a lot more. Mm-hmm. So it kind of naturally and organically came about in that way.
It's a bit more central too, isn't it? If you're kind of going everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good location. Yeah. Yep. And there were a couple, festivals that I went over for, particularly the Americana Fest that happens every September. And that kind of drew me in as well. You know, being in a genre that I, you know, around artists that I would perform with anyway, that was part of it as well.
Awesome. Well, no, it's definitely an attraction for a lot of musicians and songwriters in particular. And so it's always interesting to find out what the experience is and what draws each individual there in particular. Tell me about your songwriting and your musical journey. When did that start for you?
I first got into music at 14 when I picked up a guitar for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I started songwriting pretty much right away as I started learning guitar, and I've honestly never stopped since then. It's been a journey ever since that moment.
So what inspired you to pick up a guitar at 14?
It was just around. I had a bedroom and, you know, my own room, and, you know, I opened the closet one afternoon and there was a guitar sitting in the back of it, my mom's classical guitar. Mm-hmm. And there was no really immediate, I just kind of started toying around on it. And I think the main thing that really caught me on it was that my best friend, who was the same age as I, also picked up a guitar the same month. So we were sort of like cohorts, you know, mentors to each other, that we'd kind of go back and forth, and we kept a pretty strong connection between us in that sort of learning phase of the guitar. So
that's really
cool. That was a big part of you know, becoming a musician and learning was Jeff, my best friend at the time.
Are you still friends?
Yeah. He's got a family now and lives in my hometown. So yep. I look forward to seeing him when I go back and visit my family.
And what about the songwriting? Did you both start songwriting straight away? Who, like, what inspired you to write songs?
It was not even something I considered that I wouldn't do. It just was immediately a part of it. It was like, well, of course I'm going to write a song. You know, that's why I have this instrument. I didn't even question whether I would or wouldn't write songs.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun because both Jeff and I didn't understand music theory at all because we were just curious.
Yeah.
And so we just started writing songs with whatever sort of notes and chords felt right. At the time, many of them didn't actually work. You know, we didn't know that, but they didn't work correctly in like a scale or a key.
Yeah.
But we just liked it. And that, in some ways, that was part of a fun sort of like avant-garde approach to songwriting. And then there was some mentors. He and I both, we were involved in church and we both kind of brought our guitars there. And there were some advanced guitarists that were there at the church. So they kind of brought us into the fold and we're like, oh, this is the key of A, this is the key of C. And we were immediately like, wow, this is wild. I didn't realize there was a whole, you know, methodology for all this.
Thought people just banged the thing and moved on.
Yeah. So we built from there.
I love that. And churches, for me as well, was like a place where a lot of talented people came together on a regular basis, and there's community there. And I think that a lot of people, especially songwriters and musicians, who have the opportunity to go to church at a young age are exposed to that type of, you know, live music all the time and performance and being on stage. It's such a good training ground. Did you ever end up playing in the church or like getting involved?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got immediately plugged in to live performance there. Those kind of mentors that were the guitarists that were maybe a few years older than us, or even some like, you know, adults that were in their 30s and 40s, but typically those immediate mentors that were a few years older, they kind of brought us under their wing and, you know, gave us an opportunity to perform live. And that was, you know, that was a key experience, you know, was just being able to perform in front of people, which is terrifying, you know, of course, especially when you're just learning.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But it is a safe space because I think, well, for me, when I was at church, I didn't think of being in front of people. I felt like, you know, it was everyone's focusing on God, or at least that's what they're supposed to be doing. So
it's like a kind of
safety protection mechanism. Yeah. It's not about you. And so therefore it's a little bit easier because I had terrible stage fright, but church was fine.
Yes.
Tell me about your first song then. So do you remember it? Do you know what it was about? What inspired that first song?
I don't remember the very first one. And I think, and this has actually been a theme for me just even all the way through all the decades I've been writing. I'm pretty sure it was sort of in a dream. I had a melody and I feel like I picked up the guitar. You know, this is when I was actually 14, picked up the guitar and maybe found chords that sort of matched the melody in the dream. Again, they didn't fit any music theory, but at the time I just did what seemed to be correct. And that, I don't remember that song. I don't know if it was ever finished, but that sort of continued onwards. And then I started writing more, you know, completed songs after that.
What do you think was the turning point for you from going, like, I mean, it sounds like Jeff has taken a different path to you as far as staying in the hometown and all that. What do you think was the turning point for you as to become like a touring artist and actually get your songs out there and sharing your talent with the world?
Well, for me, the biggest part was that as far as just the creative process, I really wanted to record my work because it felt like a step of completion for me. Versus, you know, just having songs written down. And so I really put a lot of effort into writing albums and recording albums so that it felt like that this sort of creative energy and, you know, these ideas had sort of been sealed shut. And it's like, okay, this is a complete project. I can move on to writing other material. So that was a huge starting point for me, was wanting to capture it And I also was just very curious about recording and loved that part of writing and that part of the creative process.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was, then I started building such a body of work of recorded material that it seemed like a terrible idea to just sit on it. So then performing and touring were more of a support of the things that I had completed. So it's this sort of like synergy, a cycle of like writing, recording, touring, and then back to writing. And that's how it's been this whole time.
So did you have someone that kind of supported you through that journey, or like, were your parents really supportive? How did, because I mean, yes, I know that it is a very natural thing to do if you know that that's what you're supposed to do with it. And how did you work that out?
Early on, I formed a band when I was really young. Probably like 19.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like kind of like the dad of the guitar player was our manager. My parents became friends with him and they kind of oversaw us really young kids recording and touring and make, you know, having enough money to finish an EP.
Mm-hmm.
So at the very beginning, it was that, like the parents were sort of helping and assisting and overseeing just because we were so young that, you know, just the logistics of doing things. Yeah. It was very supportive. And, you know, they became friends of mine and their friends kind of became our fans. And so we built this little tiny, you know, touring act. And that was, you know, that was enough just to get some exposure and some understanding of the overall process.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I moved to the, you know, what's considered the big city near my hometown, which was in Seattle, Washington, I had enough understanding of the recording process to kind of go at it myself and make the connections and networking with the local scene there. And, you know, I was a little bit older by then too. So I kind of, you know, jumped into it on my own at that point.
So why did you move from the band to solo?
I kind of worked my way through college. I think we all went our separate ways and I was a lot more established in, you know, a much bigger city, a much bigger market. And again, I was really just focused on writing and this, you know, recording studio process. So I started bringing in studio musicians that were older and more advanced and, you know, had been spending a lot of time in the studio, and that just really clicked really well for me. And I was really inspired by working with, you know, music professionals that had been doing it for years and years.
So when you're doing your songwriting and you're thinking about the music that either you want to perform or you're potentially writing a song with someone else for them to perform, is there like a core idea of what you like to focus on or questions that you always ask yourself that you want to align with your songwriting?
It's in the studio process or just in the writing process?
Just in the, like, what type of music do you want to create? Is there a method behind the madness or is it all kind of come from a dream?
It's shifted a lot through the years. You know, I try to intentionally take different approaches kind of more or less for each project, each album.
Mm-hmm.
So early on, I would go into the studio with completed ideas that were all the lyrics and chords are written, and I kind of dreamt up an arrangement of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And these days I've, you know, really leaned more on like a producer and co-writers and a team. And so I really try to bring less completed material, less fleshed out ideas, just so that it allows for this whole team, the creative team, to help have their input and their ideas and their expertise. So in a lot of ways, it's becoming much more intangible. I'll just, a lot of times, I mean, even this current project I'm probably starting on in January, I think I may show up with absolutely nothing and just, so and just build on the fly. Yeah.
Well, that's a whole nother way to do it. Tell me about an experience or one of the times where what came out of it, you know, you're just really proud of, and how that unfolded when you were writing.
Yeah.
like your favorite song?
Yeah. One of my favorites, it's actually, it is released. It's called Cheap Joseph. Mm-hmm. And it's a song that I'd sort of built the very basic chord structure. And it, I just liked how the chords worked together. And there was a bit of a rough melody that worked with it. But I just had never, the theme never seemed to click, you know. And it seemed like also a very unique chord pattern that I'd never heard in other songs before. And so I'd written kind of like an entire song and then scrapped it and then written another song and scrapped it. Mm-hmm. And then I was reading a book about the Nez Perce tribe in the Northwest in Washington near Idaho. And this story from, you know, the late 1800s. And the theme really seemed to like inspire me, and I wanted to put it over this music and over these chords. So I used that entire novel that I had read to start constructing some of the lyrics. And then I went and traveled to the location for where this, you know, modern day tribe actually lives. And then all these battle sites that were fought in at that time. And so then I wrote the lyrics after visiting the location.
That's so cool.
So that was a really fun writing process.
That was a solo project?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about co-writing for you. When did you start co-writing? Were you co-writing with Jeff from the beginning, or was it something that you started doing when you were a bit more developed?
We actually did, yeah, without even realizing it. We were just, you know, making up songs together. And, you know, a lot of times we would just sit and riff back and forth and try different chord changes. And yeah, so we co-wrote then. But for me, I didn't really understand co-writing until I moved to Nashville.
Okay, what did you understand? Like, what changed?
Well, so the Seattle scene is a lot different. It's much more like when you think of like grunge and indie music, there's sort of a hands-off approach by the producers and engineers. They want to kind of retain the purity of like the band or the artist and let them have their sound. So a lot of times I may have gotten suggestions in the studio, but it wouldn't really be considered co-writing per se.
Right. Yep.
And it's just not a word that floats around the Seattle scene at all.
Fair enough.
So I moved to Nashville and immediately, you know, artists were talking to me. It was like, do you want to sit down for a co-write, or we've got a group that you can write with? And I was very excited by that because I had done so much, you know, reliance on writing my own stuff that it just felt like a natural progression and something I wanted to pursue. So that's been a very important part of my development, you know, in moving to Nashville.
Yeah.
And it's been really fun.
What do you think's been the biggest lessons you've learned starting to co-write in Nashville? Like, what's changed as far as your songwriting and co-writing experience has gone?
There's just been some amazing suggestions, really, of ways to approach. For instance, I would say the biggest thing is there's sort of this known fact, like, okay, the second verse needs to rhythmically vary from the first verse. And just a very slight change in the pattern really gives you a brand new set of ears for the second verse. Because you're really not approaching it in the same melodic or rhythmic format that you did in the first verse. So I've worked with co-writers that really gave me like a new rhythmic pattern for that verse. And all of a sudden it like completely opens up this whole new world for the song.
Yeah.
And allows for an amazing, you know, evolution of that song.
That's a great tip. I love that.
Yeah, it's fun.
I also do find that some people can get bogged down by structure, and mm-hmm. I've been told the opposite. It's like, no, you have to have the same syllables mm-hmm. and rhythm to the first verse and the second verse, and it has to be symmetrical. That kind of annoys me when people get so tied down of what has to happen and doesn't allow for the song to evolve the way that
it probably naturally wants to go. If you put
those intentions on it. Well, that's amazing because, you know, in the writing process, it'll feel so foreign. Like you'll feel like you're really breaking rules. Like, why can't do this? It almost jars your brain a little bit. But then when you sit and listen to the finished product, it flows just amazingly well. Like I don't think the listener feels that sort of pushback because of the presentation.
No, I love
that. So it's been fun.
And it's always good to get some a fresh perspective after you know, 245 episodes. That's definitely something that hasn't come up. So I appreciate you sharing that.
Sure.
If you were speaking to someone who was just starting, maybe they're 14 and they've just picked up a guitar, but they have dreams and aspirations to kind of follow in your footsteps, what advice would you give them? What do you think they really need to know?
Some very basic things, but important are, I think, finding a way to separate finance from creativity is important. Meaning that I see a lot of artists trying to be reliant on their instrument as a means to making a living. And in some cases that could suck the joy and you know, the fun out of it, you know, for some people. It really depends what your passions are and what direction you want. But I've struggled with it myself some. And I've seen a lot of other artists go down this path of like, well, if I'm going to really be an established musician, I have to play every day of the week and I have to perform every day of the week. And I have to make money on my instrument every day of the week. And that can be pretty rigorous and take the fun out of it completely. So
it's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a catch 22 sometimes.
Because I know a lot of people who are original artists, but they also do full-time cover gigs. And I do think I see that kind of getting tired of it and the joy of it being lost because it's become a chore. If you've ever, like, I've only ever done a few cover gigs, like I'll do them, but usually it's favors to friends. And every time I do it, I just feel like I've died a little bit inside.
Yeah.
It's such a strange, and it is, it's a strange thing because I live for music, but I think I live for singing my own songs. And
yeah,
I don't know about you, but when I say that to people, when I say I like to sing my own music, I feel like it comes across as really arrogant I'm really up myself. Like, no, my songs are the best in the world. Like there are other songs that I really like. But if I got on stage and I get the choice to sing whatever I want to sing, I'm going to sing something that I wrote because I'm a songwriter. I don't know. What's your theory around that? Like what? Because it's not. I don't think it is. I think it just depends on who you are musically.
Yeah. I mean, I do play a lot of shows and, you know, I would say somewhere in the ballpark of like 150 a year or so. And most of the shows, you know, they're, you know, depending on what format it is, they'll want me to play for 2 or 3 hours. And they'll a lot of times request that there are cover songs. And I really don't mind it too much, especially given that you can choose the cover songs a lot of the times.
Yeah.
So I've used it as a means to maybe, you know, I'll pick maybe 15 cover songs that maybe music theory wise or construction, you know, arrangement wise are challenging to me or are in sort of a format that I would maybe want to start writing in.
Yeah.
And then I sort of start to embody these cover songs that I would maybe want to write like that.
Yeah.
And so that's been a big change for me and, you know, play the cover songs that you want to sound like.
Exactly. Do you, when you're doing cover gigs, slip in your own original songs every now and then?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
How many how many would you slip in into a cover set?
Most of the time, you know, most of the time the venues or the, you know, restaurants are okay with that. They just like, look, we just want to, I think the main fear that a lot of venues have is that it maybe gets too dull or too sad. Yeah. And they're like, you know, so you can easily bring that sort of vibe up with happier covers or more upbeat covers, mm-hmm. and potentially slip in some of your own upbeat song, originals. But it also gives you the ability to like, okay, I'm going to play two or three kind of like more upbeat songs and then sneak in like a more pensive, like sad song of mine. And they don't mind that as long as like the general vibe is good.
It's an art form, isn't it?
Yeah. 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 It's like making a playlist, which is fun, yeah, you know,
a balance.
Yeah.
It's like, I always think of it as mixing a cocktail, you know, cocktail is usually the perfect balance between your sweet and sour. And I think mm-hmm. a set list is just that. You need to kind of make it kind of all sorts of flavors, but don't overwhelm mm-hmm. anyone with too much of one emotion because,
yeah,
you know, you don't want to depress your audience. Okay, so if you could collaborate with anyone in the world, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
I sort of, you know, I've done a lot of vocal training and studying, you know, with a teacher, and I use an artist named Amos Lee sort of as my, I don't know, my icon, you know, the person I'm trying to most emulate vocally, particularly because just his style is great and his approach and his, you know, the range and everything. So I would be pretty amazed to work with him just to vocally learn what I can from him.
I love that.
Yeah.
So what have you got coming up next? What's on the cards for the rest of 2023?
Well, we're kind of winding down and getting prepped for planning for 2024, mm-hmm. which is going to be a big year. So there's an album that's just been mastered.
Yay. Congratulations.
And that'll be, yeah, thank you. At Nashville, recorded in Nashville. So that'll be releasing in May of 2024. So I'm working with a team in Nashville to record some live full band video content to accompany the release. So we'll be filming in less than 2 months. We're going to film like a soundstage set of 12 songs.
Wow.
So that's happening this year. And then we'll release those as, you know, accompanying the singles that get released next year.
That's really, and you'll be touring and.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to start over in the UK in January.
Awesome.
There's a big festival called Americana UK.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've got some dates. I think I have about 18 dates surrounding that festival to support what's going on in the UK. And then I'll be back in Nashville after that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So lots coming up for a new project. That's great.
I look forward to hearing your new album. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a whole blog together and all your links to socials and your music and YouTube and all that into the description of this podcast so anyone listening can go and find you, follow you, listen to your music and support what you're doing. But I really appreciate you coming on here and sharing. Is there anything else you would like to share with our audience?
There's nothing else, no. This has been great. Thanks so much for having me on.
You've given some great advice and I really appreciate you giving me the time. No, it's been really good. So thank you. I look forward to sharing it.
Okay, thanks to you as well. Appreciate it.
Thanks for joining our songwriter Tris today. To join the family and keep up to date with future podcasts, you can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Please leave a review and subscribe. To support the podcast or contact me or our guest, please go to the website songwritertrists.com. Crowd, no one can.